environment and our climate safe. I'll hand you over to the joy.
Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in one-pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to aerohit to yoga and mobility to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free four-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off plus a free four-year warranty. Tonal.com.
News channel right away. We're blessed that Soga is hosting a number of very incredible people who have really brilliant views on climate change. Stay tuned and don't go anywhere.
National Dialogue on Climate Action. And we're calling this a policy to action call because we believe this is an opportune time for us to have this conversation on policy commitments and also trying as much as possible to push for climate action on the ground. So if you're at home listening to us, you can be a part of this conversation because I have my guests seated. We have two sets of panelists who will be joining us, taking their turns and explaining the issues to us. But we're proudly being supported by the Climate and Development Knowledge Network, the Office of the Minister of State in charge of climate change and sustainability. Then we equally have the University of Ghana's Center for Climate Change and Sustainability supporting us. But the best part is tonight I have an audience live in the studio. If you're happy to be with us, please a round of applause as we welcome and introduce. And oh, guess who we have in the audience? The German ambassador is also with us. So happy to see you, sir. His Excellency Daniel Kroll is also with us in-house. Please, another one for him, especially, because the German people have indeed been championing climate action, and we are indeed proud of that. Happy to be supported on other projects by the German people. And Ambassador, we especially want to welcome you. And I'm sure that in the course of our conversation, we'll get to hear a bit about the German story and how they are equally adding to that global push for climate action. But tonight as well, it's about you, it's about me, it's about all of us and those on the podium for tonight. And we're just getting right into it because I have the first set made up of policymakers, CSOs who set the ball rolling, because this is why I love this panel. You start it off for us so people can understand what's happening. But let me do the introduction because we have a rep from the Office of the Minister of State in charge of climate change and sustainability. We have Cedric Jelu. A round of applause for Cedric, please. Then we have Professor Kujo Owusu, Director, Center for Climate Change and Sustainability Studies at the University of Ghana. Prof, such a delight to have you. And to have moved you all the way from the University of Ghana, it means a lot to us. Grateful to have you. We have Mary Jane Enchil, Deputy CEO for Hato Foundation. And Mary, it's good to also know that you're joining the conversation and giving it a gender balance. But of course, you are supported ably by another person who's much more directly in charge of gender equality and advising on that at SIGRA, Madam Elham Mumuni. Welcome to the program. So I want us to start off first off by understanding, you know, this new portfolio, obviously, in the last administration, the Office of the Minister of State in charge of climate change wasn't, present. Now we have it. At least it was under another, agency or ministry, if you want to call it as such. So, Cedric, it's a good time to start off by understanding what you're first of all doing at this office and why the president decided to create this.
Thank you very much. His Excellency, the President of the Republic of Ghana, one of his first acts, in government is to realign government machinery. And by doing so, he created the Office of the Minister of State at the Presidency in charge of climate change and sustainability. Basically, this is the highest political, wheel or demonstration to bring, focus to climate change leadership and governance in Ghana. you do know that climate change is a topic for every discipline. There's no facet of our being that one cannot identify climate change, be it agriculture, health, science, sports, interior, everywhere. And to that extent, climate change, you know, actions has been scattered, you know, across the various ministries, agencies, and departments. So His Excellency, the President, who himself, a climate champion, you know, sought the wisdom to establish this office to serve as a coordinating point, you know, to bring together these various ministries and climate actors together to provide that political, you know, direction.
You know what? I'm sorry, sorry for cutting through, but when we're speaking to politicians, we know that you have a lot to tell us.
Yes.
So let's get straight to the action. That's what we want to hear.
Yes.
How are you practically coordinating the action on the ground then?
Yeah, for those who have been looking at the Ghanaian landscape in terms of climate change, we know that there are specialized bodies that are focused on different components of climate change. Chiefly among them is the EPA, Environmental Protection Authority, that is mainly focused about regulatory frameworks and serves as the technical arm of climate change in Ghana. Aside that, we have NADMO, you know, focusing on induced, you know, climate disaster. We have, you know, Ghana Meteorological Department, we have the Energy Commission. All of these, you know, bodies focus on different components of, you know, climate change. However, at our end, we are looking at coordinating the activities of all of these actors, making sure that they are well aligned. Because truth be told, this government has a mandate. And this government, you know, won't power, you know, having certain promises to deliver. And so our office is to ensure the political direction in coordinating activities of these bodies, to ensure that this synergy is built to cascade climate change development into, you know, the local community. So you can say that the Office of the Minister of Climate Change and Sustainability is that climate compass that we are showing a sense of direction where all the other sectors, ministers, and other bodies, you know, would align and then move toward that same course.
Let me come to Prof, because very often we don't find the academics being outspoken about issues of policy. But I feel that in this country, we ought to start adopting that approach. So how do we marry the science, you know, the science and then the policy aspect? Because you are at the center, you are watching how, of course, there's either an alignment or a disjointed coordination between the sciences and policy implementation. So what would you have to say about that?
Thank you very much. You've influenced what I was going to say by the way you've put the question. Because all over the world, academia, you don't hear us mainly in the forefront of policy, except for maybe departments that are policy oriented. We see our job as research and finding what the issues are, projecting the issue through outlets like peer-reviewed policy briefs and so ways like that. And then we expect that there will be a synergy between the leaders who are taking the decision and asking us where the direction should go. So in terms of climate, what seems to be happening is that at the global level, there is synergy between policy and academia or science, because the fore voice is the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. And they analyze and say, at the global scale, this is what is going on. So everybody knows in terms of climate change, sea levels are rising, temperatures are going up. When it comes to other indicators, well, that's where the problem comes in. So locally, you have to strengthen your science and research capacity at home to be able to identify what really is the problem in your domain. And that is where we are found wanting.
Let me try and be a bit more direct. Do you have the capacity at the University of Ghana then?
Do you have the capacity? Yes and no, I must be frank, because the University of Ghana realizing the capacity need is what brought us into existence in 2012, when the university said the climate change is becoming one of the greatest challenge, and the departments were not set up to do this. So let's cut in and do that. So we put a fantastic proposal together, and we were supported by the then Open Society Foundation, and we formed the climate change unit of the university. I mean, we have trained over 200 men and women since that to contribute to the fight. So we are building the capacity. And as I'm preparing for this, that is where the fear is. Now everybody has jumped onto the climate change wagon and is taking bits and pieces and low-hanging fruit. But the actual scientific basis is getting left out. So we still have the need to build more capacity because I don't think as a country we are there yet.
And we should be getting there. That's what we want to achieve at the end of this discussion. But Elam, talk to us. When I said SIGRA at first, a lot of people might be asking so many questions. What's SIGRA in the first place? And then I confused them further by saying you are a gender advisor there.
Yes.
So you have two roles for us tonight. Break it down. What's SIGRA and how are you feeding into the aspect of gender equality when it comes to climate action?
All right. Thank you so much. So SIGRA is Strengthening Investment for Gender Responsive Climate Adaptation, which is a 5-year project supported or funded by Global Affairs Canada and implemented by Co-Water Ghana. So for our work at the climate change level or for gender responsiveness, I would want us to reflect into maybe current and then also past projects and governments. How have they been responsive to the needs of women, to the needs of girls, to the needs of people living with disability? So that is where SIGRA comes in. So to do this, we work through 6 MDAs at the national level. And then we also work in Northern and then also in Volta region and 5 districts. So in Northern region, we are working with 3 districts. And then also in Volta region, we are working in 2 districts. So for us as a project, I think one of the key challenges or some of the key challenges we have identified also working with women-led CSOs, issues around limited capacities for women-led CSOs to be able to assess climate funding. The reason is that it's a technical area and then it needs a lot of understanding before they can put together maybe proposals or bankable proposals to be able to assess funding to support gender-responsive climate adaptation initiatives. And then also, if you look at the national level, in terms of mobilization, the voices of women, the voices of people in vulnerable situations when it comes to climate discourse are always missing. And then the reason, again, is that it's because we haven't taken enough time to do consultations with the right people. Because if you are making decisions that would have an impact on a certain class of citizens, they have to be involved. Their voices and lived experiences should be brought to bear. And then all this, we do most of the policies, decision makings, without really targeting them. And then also, I think the issue also have to do with planning and budgeting. And for SIGRA, that's where we come in heavily. So if you look at national level plans and budgets, mostly the issues are around climate change, issues around gender responsiveness are so limited.
Yeah.
So one of the key support we are providing is working with our key MDAs. We work with 6 key MDAs, Ministry of Finance, Ministry of Local Governments, EPA, Office of Head of Local Governance Service, NDPC, and the Ministry of Gender, of course, to kind of ensure that plans and budgets at that level are reflective of current realities when it comes to climate change.
Speaking about realities,
yes,
the man you're seeing to your left now will be someone you'll be working with a lot more.
Yes.
So just look him in the eye and say, well, you need to do A and B for women. What would that be?
So let me let you know
Right.
We want women and then people in vulnerable situations to be represented well when it comes to policy discourse, when it comes to engagement, when it comes to national level and international level. Mostly when it comes to representation at the international level, the people that really experience the negative impact of climate change are not there to share their own stories. So next time when you are going for COP, is it COP 30?
COP 30.
Yes, so we want you to identify vulnerable women or women in vulnerable situations.
Yeah.
Let them be at that international platform. Let them share their own lived experiences. Let them share how they are adapting to climate change with their own local and indigenous knowledge. I think that is also one key point that we miss in our policies.
And there's so much more we'll be getting to. A lot on your plate already, Cedric. Mm-hmm. and I'll be there to be inspecting the list and to see that people are indeed going. But you spoke about storytelling, and that's where I want to hear from Mary Jane Angel, because many of us have not even heard about the National Adaptation Plan, talk less of knowing about the details and what is entailed. So how do we tell the story a bit further?
Great. Thank you very much for the opportunity. Before I go on, I just want to thank everybody, the organizers of the program, and to the studio audience, and also those listening to us on radio, and to my fantastic team behind. Thanks for coming with me. Yeah, so I think the issue of climate change, of course, like everybody is saying, it's not a one-man business. And when we talk of climate change, we are looking at two main issues, adaptation and mitigation. Of course, mitigation has to do with reducing emissions from the atmosphere, and adaptation has to do with actions that are being taken to prepare or lessen the negative impact of climate change. Okay, and we can also take advantage of the positive opportunities that come along with it. So the National Adaptation Plan is actually Ghana's official roadmap, I would say, towards preparing us to how to...
Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1 pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to arrow hit to yoga and mobility, to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.
Live or lessen the negative impact of climate change on communities, on our sectors, or vulnerable groups, like you mentioned, like women, and then the elderly or the youth in our community. And this document, I was privileged to be part of those who developed the document, because I was the comms specialist on the project that actually led to the development of the plan. And recently we validated the plan, which is looking at about 5 sectors. It looks at agriculture. How do we promote activities in terms of implement projects in the agricultural space that is resilient to rainfall variability and the rise of climate change or temperature rise? And then also looks at cities. How do we make our cities resilient? How do we ensure that there's enough water management, ecosystems are adapting to the impact of climate change? So this document is actually bulky and technical as well. And so getting it implemented, because that everybody is on board. And how do we do that? That's how storytelling comes to bear, or public awareness becomes an issue, a tool that is very important to getting this information across. So one very key thing that I think we can do as part of storytelling is to humanize the NAP process or the plan. And how do we do that? Telling the real stories of how farmers are adapting to it, how farmers are using or adapting to or promoting drought resilient crops and farming, how women are moving or adapting to clean cook stoves, okay, meaning that they are reducing their reliance on charcoal. Invariably, in the long run, it also helps us to reduce, the felling of trees to produce charcoal, how young people are at the forefront restoring ecosystems for it to be able to sequester a lot of CO2 from the atmosphere. So some of these stories are very important. And when we are churning out the story, one of the very important things for me, I think we should be looking at as part of humanizing the process, is talking about it in a language that people really appreciate. Yeah. So there's this quote from Nelson Mandela that says, I'm not quoting, but just to summarize, says that if you talk to me in a language that I understand, or you talk to a man in the language that he understands, you are talking to the head. But if you speak in the mother tongue of that person, you are actually speaking to the heart. What it means is that communicating to people to be able to take action requires that they develop trust, first of all, speaking to them in their mother tongue, appealing to their emotions to be part of the process. So when we are talking about NAPS and how it will be implemented, or adaptation plans and how it will be implemented, we should be able to communicate in such a way that the individual you are talking to appreciates what you are talking about. Yeah.
And I love that. I tell stories as well, so I'll agree with you on that. But I'll give you a few minutes to just do some introspection. You were there when it all started, the National Action Plan. And you'll be telling us shortly what you think about the missed opportunities and how we can improve that. But I want to start off from Prof, because obviously there are gaps, no doubt. It's the reason for which we are not, I don't believe, halfway past our commitments. And many are wondering, let's tease them out. What are the gaps so Cedric can start dealing with them for us? So let's start from you then.
Well, from Cedric, so the government supports the gaps from academia is that we are not putting a very conscious effort at building the capacity that will allow us to do the adaptation and mitigation. So Angel talks more about the pillars. But on the adaptation and mitigation is the science. What are you adapting to? What does the science say? So I'm there and people will write papers. They want to go into media and say, Prof, it's raining in September. Is that climate change? And I'm like, where are you? So if you are in why and it's raining in September, probably
that's a good question.
That's the point. So it's the simple thing is that the science seems to be neglected in the conversation. So we need to strengthen the science. The data gaps are there. A big country like Ghana, before this climate change discourse started, we had 22 synoptic stations, the whole of Ghana, a country the size of Britain. And if you go to Britain, you have tens of thousands of points where you are gathering data. So that gaps are there in terms of the numbers, data collection, data analysis, data storage and retrieval. You even want data to do research, it's a problem. So the representative of the minister, we have to partner, we have to make that conscious effort because we are neglecting the basics upon which the adaptation and mitigation needs to be done. So we need to really look into that gap as very seriously.
Mary Jane, have you done some introspection?
Yes. I see the gap from the awareness raising perspective of the NAP. I think the NAP has done extensive work in terms of mobilizing a lot of people for its planning and planning and development, of course, where the youth are also inclusive. But one gap that I see is the fact that we do not empower our journalists, those who give out the information. A lot of the time, I used to work in one of the media houses. You see, the issue with media men and women, in terms of communicating, this is what I'm talking about, where we develop the whole thing and then just one media person is brought from the whole of this country to sit in and say that, okay, the media is present, that this person is the only one that takes out the information. What happens to the rest? So for me, I think that we should be very conscious in the attempt to get this plan out there for people to appreciate and also adapt the practices in our homes. Of course, it is very important that the media is brought on board to be trained extensively. But one also thing that I see with the media, the challenge is the lack of capacity retention when one media person is trained, because I have done a lot of training for media people in green economy, climate change, what have you. You ask yourself, all these people that were trained, are they still with their respective media houses? The answer is no. So in as much as we are calling for the integration of the media into this process to get information out there, the media houses are also called upon to make a very conscious effort to establish desk for people, just like we have the sports desk, entertainment desk, and business desk, what have you. We can have climate change and environment desk in totality. Mm-hmm. When we talk of environment in the media space, we're always talking about, oh, sanitation here and there. No, that's just not enough. The issue of climate change transcends all these things we are talking about. They contribute a lot. So for me, I think the gap here is the fact that the media is not well represented in the policy development or formulation stage.
Yeah.
And then the media house themselves are also not doing well to be able to get this.
Great, great.
Yeah.
So we need more support there.
Exactly.
You all agree with me.
Exactly. Yes. And interestingly, one other challenge, I mean, Prof is here. I'm very happy he's there because I've heard a lot about him. Yes. Yeah. Is the fact that, you see, that being intentional about climate change education in our curricula, of course, we have in our primary level, fortunately, I was also part of the group that helped Ghana integrate climate change into the curricula at the primary level. Well, I can't talk of the secondary, but the universities are doing well. Once we take our young people through what climate change is, now, it's not enough telling the person climate change is this, the cause of climate change, the impact of climate change. You are in a position to be able to motivate the child or the whoever at whatever level to be innovative, to come up with situations to address the issue. But here is the case, another gap that I see is when sometimes we are so challenged with getting the information of climate change and how we feel we can also contribute to the solution in terms of research that Prof talked about. Sometimes, which I've lived that experience, where you want to pick up a topic somewhere in 2018, I was doing my research, I wanted to pick a certain topic on REDD+. I don't know if we've heard of REDD+, reducing emissions from deforestation and forest degradation. I was told this is a new area that we do not have much data for you to want to go into. Mm. Not because it's a new area, at the end of the day I got to find out. It was because maybe the supervisor didn't have enough information on
that. That's
that.
The reality, actually.
And so you are discouraged from pursuing that. Maybe if I pursue that, we could generate some data or some information to address that.
Mary-Jane is making a very strong point here, buttressing what Prof had already said about lack of data. Then we need to support journalists. And I'm about to go to Elham, but I want us to strike a deal tonight. I've always been a gender advocate. I'm a gender advocate tonight as well. Yeah. And we have agreed that Cedric is taking a number of women for COP 30, right? Yes. I'm number one on that list, so don't contest that. But anyway, let me hear from you in terms of the gaps. So we bring in Cedric.
In terms of the gender gaps?
Yes.
Yes, I think both Prof.
Yes.
And then Madam have mentioned data gaps. So I think one of the key gaps we also identify is sex, gender, and age disaggregated data when it comes to issues around mainstreaming gender into climate adaptation issues, because you have people, you have an activity to implement, and then you have your target citizens or beneficiaries, but you'd want to understand the demographics of the community that you are working in. You get to the district assembly, maybe you might get some data, but sometimes it's not analyzed. So one key gap, especially at the sub-national level, is the limited sex, gender, and age disaggregated data. And then also another challenge.
So data is also your challenge?
Yes, it's also our challenge. Well, I think data is a challenge for Ghana. Mm. Another key challenge we find is capacity of women-led, because our project is also focused on strengthening the capacity of women-led organizations to be able to assess funding, as well as our key partner regions, that's the Northern RCC and then the Volta RCC, and then also the five districts that we are working in, as well as our national level partners, to be able to attract climate finance through bankable proposals. Because again, Madam mentioned, it's a technical area for everybody, maybe apart from profs, that may have the understanding. But if we put women, let's say, so at the forefront to assess climate finance, it's a big challenge because of the technicalities and then also the way proposals, the requirements are structured. It's difficult for them to be able to assess funding in that regard. And then also the issue again, still, I'll come back to gender responsive budgeting and then how sub-national level and then also MDAs have the capacity, very limited capacity, to mainstream gender into their plans and budgets. I mean, the assemblies tell us that they are in charge of our overall development, and then climate change is one of the key challenges that we are facing. So if they don't have data to back their planning and their budgeting, it becomes a very big challenge for all of us. And then you also have capacities of CSOs in general.
Right.
And then also the issue around fragmentation, because we see a very big proposal, you want to be able to maybe put in a proposal. Yes. We have to be able to come together with our different capacities and strengths to be able to pick, put the proposal
together. So government shouldn't be the only ones doing coordination, some level.
Yes, at the CSOs level, yeah. I mean, it should be done.
Should happen.
Yes, yeah. And then sometimes too, the lessons from projects are not documented. So most often, people have implemented projects. For example, I'll use gender responsive budgeting. It's been done for so many years. But sometimes when you even go to the ministry, you want to trace back to maybe the past 10 years or the past 15 years, you don't find any information. You don't find any lessons learned. So it's the same way with climate adaptation issues. Lessons are not documented, so people don't really get to learn.
So it's actually coming back to the same point about data and how we report it, telling more stories, bringing in more journalists, and then the cash, very important. But many of you at home may have heard climate, adaptation, so many jargons tonight. It's simple. This is the Joy News National Dialogue on Climate Action. We're calling it a policy to action call, and that's why you're hearing from all the experts. We're about hearing from government and what they intend to do, but we cannot proceed without acknowledging the Climate and Development Knowledge Network, the Office of the Minister of State in charge of climate change and sustainability. Then we have Prof and his team at the University of Ghana Center for Climate Change and Sustainability. They are all supporting us with tonight's conversation. And since I've mentioned the Office of the Minister of State in charge of climate change, Cedric, we're back to you again, because you're the technical advisor there. You've heard about the gaps. Data is key. I mean, from what I've heard tonight, then we'll talk about the journalist storytelling and how we can get to COP30 later on. So just start off for us then. On the issue about data then.
You know, I thought I was coming to share perspective on the topic, but I didn't know that I was coming to also take home, you know, a huge assignment.
Yes.
But given the fact that this is a national television, I think that the advocacy is far bit easy for me, you know, to convince the Honorable Minister, you know, of her request.
Yeah.
But speaking to that, I should also say that the Honorable Minister is someone who is truly in touch with these issues. 2 weeks ago, we were, you know, in Bonn, Germany, for SB 62. When the minister met the Ghanaian delegation, one of the things that he was concerned about is the delegation, the quality of delegation. So what happens, or what we saw in Bonn, is that most people who were representing, you know, government were people coming from the various ministries and agencies. But the minister queried that if it's about, you know, climate finance, where are the corporate finance experts? Why are we not seeing people from, you know, Ecobank, CBG, you know, here with us, you know, talk about, you know, climate finance? And if it is about gender responsiveness, where are the advocates? He's speaking to the specialized group, people with expertise. The academia is here. We have had a number of engagement with Prof, you know, in terms of collaborative work. But sadly, they were not in Bonn. Why? Is it for the visa? Is it for the financing, accreditation? I speak to the fact that the minister is very much concerned about this. And I can assure you that, yes, at COP30, we would make sure that you are represented. Mm. And we will also make sure that other groups, that, you know, are specialized in this space will be represented. Mm-hmm. But truly speaking, we talk of narrative. I must say that it is a very important topic to talk about.
Yeah.
Because there's something that I call the untold stories. When people hear about climate change, they often...
Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial fill in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1-pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to aero hit to yoga and mobility to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.
Hear climate change from different perspective. Even myself, the first time I heard about climate change, I was a little boy sleeping on the floor of my uncle, you know. And every time I look at the TV, climate change, you know, it is polar bear. So growing up, you know, I had climate change. I said, but you know, we don't have ice in Ghana. What is happening? You know, but later I got to realize that no, climate change affects us, you know, in different ways. The nexus of climate change. For instance, talking about gender, do you know that when climate change disaster strikes, women and men are impacted differently, not the same. Women suffer the most. And so if you are putting up adaptation plans, you must be able to appreciate the fact that you need to be, you know, intentional and specific, as she said, about the different offerings. And so I believe in telling the stories, the untold stories, and hearing these stories, you know, from the people themselves. One of the challenges I threw to Evans and the Joy team when they came to our office is that we appreciate that this discussion for the first time and the few times to come would be held here at these studios. But we are ready and willing to take this discourse down to the people. Let us have this discussion also, you know, where the sea is ravaging lives and destroying properties. Let us go to the north and look at the face of drought and let people who have not experienced or seen drought see within their own eyes, as they see Philip Kadoji, that this is drought.
Yeah.
You understand me? Let people appreciate what it takes for someone to be devastated by floods. I did a project at Adabraka, and one old lady told me that, Cedric, anytime the clouds gather, then I'm traumatized. Why? Because she knows that just 2 hours of rainfall, the place will be flooded. And she will not have any place to sleep, you know, for about a week. That is how people are traumatized about climate change. And speaking about that, let me delve into data. That there is no sound decision that can be made anywhere without data. You must be able, you know, to rest on sound data. That is why at our end, we, you know, are collaborating with the University of Ghana to ensure that we get the data through their research, through their work in giving climate change direction. Will you be surprised if I tell you that ISE, the University of Ghana, has carried out the research, and evidence shows that about 70% of climate funds and projects that are being implemented do not actually go down to the ground. And those who are affected by it don't actually, you know, get the solution that they want. Sadly to say, I've worked across Africa and around the world. You also know that 60% of these climate funds ends up in people's pocket as consultancy fees, whilst people are dying, whilst disaster keeps on striking. So we need some of these data to tell the stories, because the story cannot be told in a vacuum. It is about people, it is about...
Yeah, but we're being told tonight that the data is not there. How are you fixing that problem?
Yeah, so then brings me to the issue of, you know, collaboration. You know, it is important to appreciate that some people, organizations, you know, are expert, you know, in terms of data collection and have the resource for that. The Honourable Minister, you know, has made calls, time with a number for such collaboration for people who have that data to come in. For instance, MTN was, you know, at our office the other day when we discussed about how can we leverage on, you know, the potency of their data and by extension all other networks, without any harm to anyone.
Right.
All other networks, you know, to leverage on their data. For instance, early warning signs. I have a friend here who is from the Ghana Meteorological, you know, Service. They have been giving out, you know, data, information about early warning signs every day. But that data does not reach the people that require them. So do you know what it would mean to them? If every farmer, for instance, can get an alert on their phone to even tell them when it will rain and when it will not rain, and how long it will rain. If MTN, if Telcel, if, you know, all the networks to say, can be able to even push these early warning signs coming from the meteorological services that if it's about to rain, let us know the quantum of rainfall that is coming and whether this rainfall can cause floods or not. And what should people even do? Simple information. If you're at a low level, can you move to a higher ground? And where's some of the safety net? You can go to a church, you can go to a mosque. You know, simple information, you know, beeping on people's phones.
Cedric, you know, this is why we are calling it a policy to action call. So we are committing and holding your feet to the fire that you're going to do all of these things you're saying. Because you have the executive power then.
Yeah, so I accept that challenge. And of course, the Honorable Minister accept that challenge. But we also accept the challenge that the call is a movement. And that as stakeholders, we all have, you know, a contribution to make. And so whilst government, you know, has demonstrated that political leadership, you know, in terms of governing us, coordinating us, let all other stakeholders, you know, embrace their share, you know, of the challenge.
You know, I'm beginning to get convinced as to why the minister considered you as a technical advisor. Because you have such a sweet way of escaping so many things, including the fact that we're not in bond with you. German ambassador is here. I'm not sure that being a leading voice in climate action, they would have denied any of us a visa.
No.
I'm not sure that would have been the case. So we just missed this. We should have done this earlier.
Yeah.
And we'll keep doing this until the end of the year. We'll get so much more places to go to. Let's now talk about accountability. The nationally determined contributions, we've made commitments.
Yeah.
Do you have that as part of your handing over notes? Because you're just, let's say, 6 months into office. Are you mindful of the commitments we've made and what progress have we made so far?
The government is very mindful of the commitment we've made, the extent to which, you know, the NDC 3.0, you know, has been, you know, put together and, you know, submitted to, you know, UN3CC. That extent, we have, you know, the thematic areas that we are working on, but chiefly to say that, you know, we need to mobilize, you know, about $9.3 billion, you know, dollars to address our climate needs. And so these financing gaps is a huge one for us. How to mobilize these gaps, you know, domestically and then, you know, external. Yes, but one can concern themselves with the financing gaps where the complex nature of seeking these, you know, funding to address our NDC needs is a big challenge. Because to be told, I mean, those, you know, people here who are the studio will tell you that when you apply to GCF, Adaptation Fund, you know, and all the other climate-related funds, sometimes it takes about 1, 2, and even sadly, 5 years, you know, to even get even a response, you know, talk alone of getting the funding. But what does it mean when disaster strikes, be it flooding, heat waves, whatever, and then it will take GCF 2 good years just to peruse documents? So there's a challenge with that complexity in terms of requirements. We are calling, you know, for the international parties. I'm happy the ambassador himself is here, who can carry this voice, you know, up the international space. We are calling for a more simplified process in this, you know, regard. We're talking about contingency fund. Disaster has, you know, strived. We don't need to wait for 1 month before we address some of these things. It must be addressed urgently. Sometimes if you see the document that you have to, you know, fail to apply for this, that failing alone can even take about a month. You understand me? Whilst people are dying, whilst the sea, you know, level rise is ravaging lives. And even the financing space in itself is limited. There are, you know, little space in terms of funding that, you know, is used to address some of these things. So our advocacy, you know, and that of the minister, you know, when he spoke at some of these side meetings at Bonn, is to break down this, you know, complexity, is to ensure that the processes are less cumbersome. But he also made, you know, a giant call: climate debt forgiveness or climate debt cancellation. That all the items identified in our NDCs, they are matters of development. And all the issues of development invariably are to some extent caused by the impact of climate change. When we borrow to finance sea defense, we are borrowing to address a climate challenge, a climate problem. When we borrow to give loans to smallholder farmers, we are borrowing to address what issues of what drought, which is caused by climate change. But the issue is that who caused climate change? Or how did it happen? There's no argument. The fact that it is the development of the global north
that has caused climate change. Africa contributes only 4% to it. So why are we pushed to the wall to borrow, to finance the impact of climate change that is all caused by us?
Yeah, but no one is forcing you to borrow, is it?
No one is forcing us to borrow, but we're talking about the international financing requirement, which makes it difficult to borrow. Because at the end of the day, mobilizing funding domestically alone is not enough. However, the financing system that comes to us are mostly concessional. And so they say, this is the money, but we're not giving you this money what for free. You must borrow. And it says, okay, we're giving it to you for 30 years, for 40 years, you know, with this interest rate, take your time and pay. But the case you are making is that this money must come to address the problem that you caused. I make this, you know, analogy every time when I go to places like this, that if you are driving on the street and someone, you know, hits your car, do you tell the person to borrow you money to repair your car, or you charge the person according to law to repair your car for you? That is the situation you are facing. Mm. When we borrow to address drought, floods, heat waves, and all the impact of climate change, we are borrowing to address the impact of climate change. So you are making the case that our high-level debt that we see is a consequence of climate change. And as part of the financing gap that we are talking about, we need to now look at climate debt forgiveness, climate debt cancellation.
Well, here's Cedric looking for free lunch. not talking much more about accountability, but we'll get there. I'll still push him to it. And in fact, so much has been said tonight. If you're in the audience, I'm sure that you're at home as well, you'd want to ask a few questions. Feel free to do that via all the platforms that we're streaming on. But for now, I want to go into the audience and then just get a few comments and interventions. So if you have anything to share with us, we'll do that very shortly. Let me just give a minute to Mary Jane, perhaps to touch on what you've heard from Cedric in terms of the how they plan to involve CSO, deal with the challenges as well, while we're ready our audiences to also contribute to the conversation.
All right, thank you. Listening to Cedric, I don't know if I'm permitted to say that I have some kind of a mixed feeling.
Mm.
Because I think, first of all, the NDC update is 2.0. It's the second time we are updating our NDC. The first time was the INDC. That was an intended nationally determined contribution. So when the Paris Agreement entered into force, it now became a nationally determined contribution. So every 5 years, we need to update that document to reflect what nationally we intend to do. So I think we are on the second route to doing that. Consultation is still ongoing. I don't know if it's submitted. Yeah. It's not submitted yet. Yeah. Great. So, I mean, on the issue of climate finance, my dear, the point is, if we need resources as a country...
Please tell him. Please tell him.
Okay. There are 1,001 funds available that you can get for free if you want, for free. But you need to work for it. And that is to write in bankable project proposals to attract grants, not loans. Even with loans, okay, with the multilateral development banks, including the IMF and then the World Bank, there are facilities available that if you apply for putting forward your climate issue or making the case for climate change, those facilities can be advanced to you. That's if you want loan, can still be advanced to you, but at a reduced interest, they call it interest rate, right? What's on it? Yes, so there is a facility that we can always go in for. That's if you want loan. But for me,
going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues use to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1-pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to aero hit to yoga and mobility to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.
Sitting at where I sit as a CSO, I find it quite difficult when we, and unfortunate, when we are so much interested in loans rather than getting the grant.
Yeah.
Because the GCA we are talking about recently gave out a grant of 30.1 million USD. Wow. To Forestry Commission to undertake
so
a project.
So there's a lot there.
Yes.
And we'll be coming there shortly. Let me just yield to the audience now, so we are able to get some of their perspectives on this matter. Kindly introduce yourself, and then tell us where you're joining us from, and you can just contribute to the conversation. Yes.
My name is Abdul Ganiyu Al Hassan. I also work with ESO Yeful Ghana in Tamale. I'm so excited to be here. The conversation is very interesting. And I want to make a point about what Ilham has talked about in terms of financing at the local level. If you look at the District Assembly Common Fund, for example, there has been some guidelines that have been issued by the Minister of Finance. It will be very difficult to find any item that is related to climate financing at the district level. So that is already a gap. And I would like to know what the Climate Minister Cedric is doing in relation to what we can do to be able to get funding, like she's saying that we have the money within the country. How are we able to do that? And then also you talked about collaboration when it comes to data more. Is it more about funding the research institutions or just collaborating? Thank you.
Yeah, we'll take more interventions then.
Yes. All right. So I want to thank the panelists. I've really enjoyed the conversation so far. My name is Yawa Jemaine Bwafo. I'm a senior research fellow at the Center for Climate Change and Sustainability Studies. So my question goes to the gentleman from the ministry. And considering that you are a ministry that is in charge of coordinating all climate change related matters in the countries, and I know you're very new, so I'm curious to know what exactly are some of the strategies that your ministry has in place to effectively coordinate, you know, climate change within the country? Because as you know, there are different actors, but so far I haven't heard of any particular strategy that you have in place to ensure that we are really integrating all the issues and ensure that we have a common platform for addressing the issues. Thank you.
And just to make optimum use of the time, all these two are to Cedric. So Cedric, you deal with that while we take the next round of questions coming through.
Yes, so the first action of the minister was to form the Interministerial Technical Working Group. I'm answering Ganiyu. And this Interministerial Working Group is serving as a technical committee. Technical committee, you know, advising the minister and of course receiving proposals. Right. So for instance, like you talk about, if we receive some proposals, we submit to this technical working committee that is coming from different, you know, ministries to share perspective and make a contribution on it to make it bankable. Then it is presented to the various, you know, funding authorities, you know, to see how we can get resources for that. Now, to your question about what strategy are we putting in place, you know, that is actually in one of the questions that I'll be asked, but let me just respond to that quickly. Number one, it is a vision of the minister to establish a climate change and sustainability hub. This hub will become a center of excellence in Ghana and to also serve the sub-region, where we are going to ensure that we have the capacity, you know, to build people's technical abilities in terms of grant writing and how to engage these international partners. It will be a space also for, you know, research and innovation, where we'll be able to, you know, collaborate with the academia to provide and research, you know, and to get sound data, to get evidence-based data, you know, to support the climate change solution. It also be a space that would lead in harnessing the financing mechanism, you know, how to get support. For instance, I see a number of CSOs here. You know, where do they go to if they want to get funding? You know, what are their approaches? And so this hub will also serve as a center, you know, trying to help young people, CSOs, and government institutions to mobilize, you know, funding for that. So it will be a one-stop center that will serve this purpose. Beyond that, the minister wants to establish a climate change and sustainability unit at all ministries, all departments, all agencies, municipal, metropolitan assembly. So this unit will not be a standalone unit. Mm. To report to, you know, a national body somewhere. It will be embedded in the ministries, agencies, department. So for instance, we know that in every ministry we have a procurement officer, we have a finance officer. It's embedded so that in the accident of every government, you know, body, there will be that, you know, unit that will incorporate the climate sensitivity issues into their planning, to their programming and implementation. So these are two key areas in the strategies that the minister is putting in place. Then let me also speak to what is coming up, which will be the National Climate Summit. So we aim to organize a National Climate Summit to have, you know, like this discourse on the national scale, you know, where we bring all stakeholders on board, you know, to actually, you know, look at, Mr. used the word monster, to look at, you know, the animal, the monster called climate change, and how we as a country can prefer an endogenous solution to this. So these are three key, you know, strategies that is on the table for now. Right. And as time goes on, I hope there'll be forum to share.
And I'm sure that you're equally eyeing international partnerships, and speaking about that, the German ambassador is with us. So when we're wrapping this up, I'll give him the final word to also brief us on how the German people, obviously, if you're talking about climate change, there's no way you take out the German people, and how they've been a leading global voice in terms of climate action. So we'll be yielding to him when we're about wrapping up. But let me take just a couple more comments and questions. Kindly introduce yourself and tell us about
All right. My name is Jonathan Goka, and I coordinate a civil society platform called CASA Initiative Ghana. In Frederick's submission, he made mention of the climate change funds that we received. Just about 30% gets to those who are really impacted by climate change, and about 70% ends up somewhere. What are the mechanisms that are going to be put in place to make sure we have a reversal of this situation? In this country, we cry a lot that we don't have resources to address our climate change issues. But the little that is even coming in, how accountable are we? How transparent are we? All the ministries that are receiving climate change funding, what mechanisms are in place to ensure that those who really need support from these funds really need it? It doesn't end up in big workshops at Aliza Hotel all the time, that we have all these big climate change funds. We end up doing big workshops, and what gets to the ground is very little. And one of the gaps, as my sister mentioned, is about the involvement of our local district assemblies in implementing climate change interventions. Most of the time, you see our ministries themselves going to the ground to go and implement activities, where the district assemblies, in most cases, are sidelined. What are the mechanisms our new minister is going to put in place to make sure that no matter which ministry is implementing a climate change project, the district assemblies are integrated into these processes to ensure that those who are vulnerable receive the support that they need?
Do we have any? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, thank you. My name is Thomas Kankam. I work with UN Environment on the NDC Action Project. We work with the EPA, Ministry of Environment, Ministry of Transport. My take is just a contribution to the discussion, right? So Mr. Cedric and Mary Jane talked about climate finance and all. But then from our work at UNEP, what we've realized is that it's not like they've clearly alluded to, it's not the lack of the funds, but it's also the enabling environment in the country to receive those funds. So for example, we have DBG, which has a mandate to do certain things towards development, right? There's Ecobank, which is the DCF accredited entity. So how are we working with all of these bodies to create an enabling environment where the small order farmer in my village somewhere would be able to, you know, assess that kind of funding? So it's not about really asking for more funding, but with the little we have, how are we creating the space for people, the vulnerable people, the real people
who are affected by climate change to be able to assess those types of funding. I think that is the work we can easily do, because we always tend to look at the external. But let's look at internally, what can we do to, you know, loosen up the system so that people can tap into these resources in terms of capacity building and also policy. Because at UNEP, under the UN NDC Action Project, what we did was to come up with a solar power irrigation investment plan. Because we realized that solar power irrigation is not such a new technology in the country, but then nobody seems to get their head around it, right? It's expensive, the farmers don't know how to maintain it and all of that. So those are the simple things as a country we can pay attention to, because agriculture is the backbone of our economy. So we should be able to pay attention to those kinds of areas, make it a priority and not just talk about it, but then also take action that will unleash the ideas we always put in policies. So I think that is what we can do as a country at our level. And then my second point would be about coordination. Look, Ministry of Lands and Natural Resources have their own thing they are doing about climate change. EPA is doing something. Ministry of Environment is doing something. Ministry of Transport, almost everybody wants to get a bit of the pie. But how, so I think that is where your ministry is very strategic and opportune, that you guys will take hold of that opportunity and try to mobilize everybody around a national agenda. Because there's NDPC, but how much has NDPC penetrated into the climate change discussion? Because we are talking about development. You mentioned that development or climate finance is a development issue. So there should be that kind of
Coordination.
Coordination and cohesion. So that's my contribution. Mm. Thank you.
You know what? There's just too much for Cedric to handle tonight. let me yield to Prof. Let me start with you, Elam, and then I'll yield to Prof. to make some comments as well.
So in terms of contribution or supporting maybe grassroots organizations or civil society to assess climate finance. When we began 2 years ago implementation, we were also looking at to see whether there's data or there's a pool where you can have access to organizations in the climate space, and then also to be able to get data around how much finance have come into the country for climate change issues. And this way, obviously, we couldn't find it. We tried at the national level. We didn't get the data. We tried at the sub-national level. It was the same thing. So what we did in, I think, April this year, was to convene a climate finance workshop where we did a study to kind of identify all the funding streams for climate change and put it together into a space that CSOs can have access to. Of course, we share that with them. And then also at the national level with the Minister of Finance, if you are looking to attract more finance, you should be able to demonstrate to donors what you have used, the funds you have received before, what the
accountability.
Exactly, you have to be accountable, and then you have to demonstrate the impact that have been made. So what we have worked with the Minister of Finance now to kind of have strengthen the activate to be able to monitor climate finance, money that comes into the country for climate change purposes. So in that regard, Ghana, we can demonstrate that, yes, this is how much we receive in 2025 or 2026, and this were the areas it went to. I think the gap we have also had with CSOs is that most of them are not open to share the funding that comes to them.
The funds.
Yes.
But nobody wants to share the cash.
Nobody wants to share. So maybe I would also call on CSOs that as we talk about coordination, collaboration, I think it's also to strengthen our own systems so that we'll be able to attract more funding other than working in silos where we are all thinking of what comes to me and then we also don't want to share so that we are able to attract more.
Prof, is there a reason why each time we talk about climate change, you know, the conversation seems to be so up there for many people?
Yeah. There is, because even what we are doing here, we're talking about climate change and it's as if that is the only problem we have. So the gentleman from UNDP, UNEP, I like the contribution he's having, because I've gotten to a point I'm telling my students that if we are not careful, we will lose our eye on the ball and blame everything on climate change. For instance, dry season comes in a small community, there is no water to drink because climate change has intensified. But is it not more of a problem of not developing and providing potable water for the community? That is why the severity of the dry season is having more impact on the people. And for the audience and all of us listening, the conversation is climate change and sustainable development. You are sustaining the development. So if you have Kwabena, where I'm trying to develop something, and you don't have a pipeline to that place, and people don't have water to drink, is it climate change that is creating the water problem in Kwabena, or not consciously developing, doing your job as a government, as a country, to serve your people? So let us not hide behind the climate change and put everything that is not going well as climate. But I will come again. From where I sit as an academic, we also have to be careful when we talk about, oh, the money ends up somewhere. I have gotten a lot of donor funding, either as a lead or as part of a consortium to train. A lot of the people in the audience, it's money that I receive that gave them stipend and support to be PhD holders themselves. The money I got, none of it was technically to go down to